Hello, everyone, and welcome to Open the Pod Bay Doors. This is our fortnightly-ish news special. We're actually coming to you a little bit out of sync. It is Friday the 30th of April. We normally do this on Monday, but we are taking 70 VCs as part of our Aurora group to Adelaide next week. So the South Australian government has helped us come down. A few of you may have heard of the South Start Conference, which goes on there. So we're overlapping with that. And we've got a bunch of fun activities for that pretty amazing group of people. I mean, I really do, you know, maybe it's partly because I moonlight as a VC, or probably more than moonlight, 50% of my time as a VC. I feel part of that community and I really, really love it and enjoy it. So it's a privilege to bring them all together, but it has affected our schedule a little bit. We actually thought about not running this, and then I thought, no, I really enjoy doing it. And I think it's an important update. And just quickly, wanted to have a quick update on what we're doing in Adelaide. I know we're heading down there. We are launching our Horizon group. So as well as Aurora, which is for VCs, we have a group called Horizon, which is for angel investors. And we're rolling out our club in Adelaide. There's still 5 spots only left in that group. We're doing a sort of special discount. So normally it'd be $4,000 to join. The very kind government is helping us subsidize it to attract some members, and it's just $1,200. So you get curated deal flow and a bunch of great people to hang out with and learn from and share experiences with. So it'll be a lot of fun. And if you're interested, please drop Sam a note. So it's sam@innovationbay.com. There was a great piece of news out this week that kind of was a catalyst to doing this one, which was Main Sequence announcing their new $250 million deep tech fund. Their second fund, the first one was $240 million. And this just allows them more firepower, you know, more access to great people, you know, and there's a lot of good deals out there. So yeah, we've got Mike Zimmerman, who's one of the partners from Main Sequence. He joined us. We also had Andrew Horsley, who is a founder. He's the founder and CEO at Quantum Brilliance, which is basically doing room temperatures quantum computing, which is pretty remarkable. Based out of Canberra, some research was done there, and I think in Germany. So fantastic business. I should disclose Gelix is an investor in that business. But we love Andrew and what they're doing. And then Sarah Nollet joined us. So Sarah is one of the partners at Tenacious Ventures. She's amazing. She's been on the podcast, or the main podcast. Not this is not the main one, but she's had a deep conversation with me, I think last year. Amazing lady. And yeah, she's got a lot of insights. So they are focused on ag tech, which I think does have some crossover with deep tech. I liked that theme because there's not many VCs in Australia that are focused on a specific sector. Sarah is, and I'd say that Mike is with Main Sequence. They're focused on deep tech. So I thought it was quite a nice way to round it out. It's a fairly short episode. We go deep on a few issues, including the Ingenuity, which is the helicopter that's now flown on Mars. We talked a little bit about Octopus Deploys and their massive $220 million investment round. And of course, we talked about Main Sequence's new fund. So hope you enjoy it. I certainly did. So let's go and hear from the panel. All right, we are back with our news special. We have our panel in front of us. So I'm joined with by Mike Zimmerman, Andrew Horsley, and Sarah Nollet. I think Sarah's been on the show before, but we have two newbies here. So Mike, I might just get you, I'll just do what's on the order of my screen here. So Mike joined first. So Mike is a partner at Main Sequence Ventures, and you got some news, but do you want to just give us a quick background on you, Mike, and what you're up to?
Yeah, sure. Well, personally, I grew up in the U.S., moved down here in the mid-90s, just to date myself, and been working with startups, either as a founder in operating roles or an investor, for about the last 20 years. I joined Main Sequence when it got off the ground in 2016.
Yeah, you must be one of the most tenured. I was going to say old, but that's rude. So most tenured VCs in the ecosystem.
is that fair? Yeah. Well, yeah. If ages are a factor, I've kind of moved in and out of the investment world, which I think has helped me. Yeah. So I was kind of a investor, and then I went to the other side for a bit.
Yeah, great. All right. And you've got some big news that we'll talk about in a minute. You've just raised a massive new fund. So that's super exciting. Next on the screen, Andrew Horsley. So Andrew is the CEO and co-founder at Quantum Brilliance, based in Canberra. Anyone that can understand quantum computing and the mathematics behind it is an absolute genius. Andrew seems to combine that with some commercial chops as well. So any more you want to add to that CV, Andrew?
That's a pretty solid introduction, Ian. Thanks. So, my background, I'm a physicist and entrepreneur, and my background's been in taking science and turning that into usable tools. And at Quantum Brilliance, what we do is we use Diamond to make quantum computers that aren't just powerful, but they can also be an everyday technology. And that's one of the challenges that we see in quantum computing at the moment, is that there's a lot of amazing progress in the sector, but it's dragging us back to the 50s and 60s of mainframe size, you know, room size devices that will do great things, but also be fundamentally limited in how we can use them and the applications they can support.
Yeah.
So with Diamond, it's an extreme thing, and we can shrink down quantum computers to be, you know, a lunchbox size device that gives you supercomputer level performance. And so you're using this then, you know, under your desk, in a satellite, you can have thousands of them in a supercomputer. So it really transforms how we think about quantum computing.
Yeah. And the reason that it's smaller is because it's, you can basically do it at room temperature. You don't need the, you know, close to absolute zero fridges to be operating this, yeah?
That's right. So the Diamond itself acts to protect the quantum system from the environment. You don't need the cryogenics or vacuum systems.
Right. I don't think today we'll go into the science behind quantum and the maths, unless Sarah and Mike want to go down that rabbit hole. They're shaking their heads here, so...
I've got a list of 20 or 30 questions I would love some detailed feedback on.
The one I mentioned it feels like magic, or it's often pitched like magic. I think that's just because of lack of familiarity, though. So there's so much amazing science that in our everyday lives that underpins all the technologies that we use in everyday aspect. Like if we think 150 years ago, electricity would have felt like magic. If you think, you know, put yourself in the 1950s and think about a smartphone, it would have felt like magic.
Yeah.
It's just that quantum tech, it's very well understood science, but we haven't seen it so much in everyday lives yet.
Yeah.
And so that I think is, it's not particularly more challenging than a lot of other amazing things.
Yeah. I'm no expert in it, I should add. I mean, we're expert enough. Like, you know, I should disclose Jülich is an investor in Quantum Brilliance, so we're believers. But we tried to do a bit more research on it. And, you know, going down the rabbit hole of how quantum works, I mean, it's kind of an evidence of parallel universes. I mean, it gives you a headache just trying to figure out. So anyway, we're not going to go too far down that. Andrew's here to make sure that we are like grounded around the news and why this matters to Australia and the ecosystem. Sarah, welcome. You are from Tenacious Ventures, which is an ag-focused investment fund, which I think you officially got off the ground last year, but you're fairly new into it. So yeah, do you want to just give us a bit more background?
Sure. Thanks, Ian. Hey, guys. Sarah Nolet. We are Tenacious Ventures. So we are a specialized agri-food tech venture capital firm. We actually just did our final close somewhat recently, which will get announced soon, which is super exciting. So we are sort of done fundraising for the moment and have made 6 investments to date. We focus all along the agri-food tech supply chain seed series A stage and have a climate impact mandate around helping agriculture transition to a carbon neutral and climate change resilient future, which we absolutely believe is key to what the planet needs and what humanity needs, but also what will drive returns. So very passionate about that.
Yeah. And you are unusual in that Tenacious is one of the very few funds in Australia, and I'd probably include Main Sequence in this, which is, again, great to have Mike here, that is focused on a sector. So you're focused on ag tech, Main Sequence is focused on deep tech. So it's part of the reason we wanted you on here. Do you think we're going to see more specialized funds like that as we go forward? Sarah?
Yeah, I think we will. I mean, it's a trend we've seen globally in terms of specialization at the early stages. It can definitely help because diligencing really early deals is hard and time consuming, as everyone knows, but in a sector that's even more challenging. What's interesting about agriculture, and Mike, I'm sure, says the same thing about deep tech, is there's so much within that. And maybe everyone says that about their sectors, but you know, the food supply chain is long, and you know, inputs all the way through to food, there's a lot that happens in there, and it's biology and it's hardware and software. So there is quite a lot of deep tech too. And that specialization we find helpful. You know, we spend 100% of our time thinking about the future of food and ag, and feel really privileged to be able to do that.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the news. I mean, I think this may end up, we've got quite a tight focus today. So we're just going to go deep on deep tech and maybe some coverage with ag tech and hear that. So yeah, Mike, Main Sequence announced your new fund this week. I think it was in the AFR on Tuesday.
That's correct. Yeah.
$250 million. Yeah. Tell us about it. Like, this is exciting.
Oh, we're excited. That's for sure. So, yeah, no, it's great news. It's great news. So 250 mil is just slightly bigger than our first fund, the 240. But I think what's notable is that in the first fund, we had the, you know, really the seed funding of CSRO and the federal government, 100 million of that. And that was always going to be kind of a one-off to get us started. And so in the new fund, we've got 100% outside capital, which is great. We had all of our first fund investors back in, and then a big number of new investors, primarily a lot of family offices and you know, working through some of the big wealth management firms like Morgan Stanley and others. So,
there was some institutional money in there too. Any super money that you can talk about?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So Host Plus has been a really key supporter. Host Plus and Temasek were basically our anchors in Fund One. We did have other institutions in there, such as Lockheed Martin. But, you know, the main ones to talk about are Host Plus, which is, you know, the primary backer of many, many VC funds and really the driver of VC. I think they've got $2 billion allocated to venture investment, either direct or either through funds or direct investment, and then Temasek, $300 billion plus wealth fund out of sovereign wealth fund out of Singapore, and they're very focused on a lot of the same sectors we are. So it's very good alignment.
I mean, look, it's great seeing, you know, Sam Cecilia as the CIO at Host Plus has been in active for a long time, but he talks about it. You know, $2 billion is a good start, but it's still not massive. Like, you know, I think his fund is 40, maybe a bit more than that, maybe 50 billion. So it's still, you know, less than 5% of his overall exposure. Sarah, I mean, like, you know, you and I have been through the process of, we haven't quite got to the end point of our first fund close, but we don't have the luxury of going out to institutional investors. It's a different look for the first funds, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've got the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, which are a quasi-institutional. Some of the diligence felt perhaps institutional, but actually was just we didn't have the muscle yet well flexed, and was really important testing of our you know, data room and processes and things. So we do have a couple corporate investors. So, you know, some of these kinds of things, but nothing at the scale Mike has experienced yet, although, you know, perhaps hopefully part of our future.
Yeah. And Andrew, we should bring in the founder perspective here. I mean, early stage businesses need funding to go forward. I mean, quantum computing has quite a long path to commercialization and getting serious revenue. So you are going to be raising money. I mean, how important is seeing fund closes like this to founders like you?
Oh, I mean, it's fantastic to see. And I think maybe putting my then... you know, going beyond quantum brilliance, I think one of the challenges we face in Australia is we've got so much good science and such a challenge in doing anything with it. And one of the challenges there is the lack of access to local capital in the way that then other ecosystems do. There's a lot of factors in there. But the flip side of that is I think it's still a very underserved capital market. And so from an investor point of view, it's a fantastic opportunity to be investing into like Main Sequence. I think this is, aside from the incredible success of Fund One, the Main Sequence, the fact that the Australian market does have such a fantastically strong deal flow potential and is still underserved is one of the reasons why they've managed to raise such a strong fund too.
Yeah.
Can I ask Mike a question?
Yeah, so yeah, of course. Sorry. Yeah, take over. Like, you run your own podcast, so you're good at asking questions. So go ahead.
I knew I was going to get a little jab/maybe plug. AgTech, so what? Listen, Mike, what about the deep tech message resonated with investors in the raise process? I'm curious. I think the narrative of we need more complex businesses and technologies to solve problems of the future absolutely makes sense to us. But I'm curious if that message was a big part of what resonated with investors.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say three things, Sarah. One is, given we were raising right in the middle of a pandemic, you know, some people look at that as very challenging. It was very challenging, but on the other hand, probably helped if you knew investors, probably helped in terms of communication. You could do a lot virtually and get people together, things like that. But I think the pandemic did raise awareness about the power of science to solve problems. For everyone. And so I think that helped us get a good reception. I think the unique focus and partnership with CSRO and that focus on really, we back companies that are commercializing research. So it's kind of a narrow and distinctive focus. And then the third thing is, you know, something you're well aware of, Sarah, but we're seeing now really for the first time over the last 12 months, alignment between governments, corporates, and institutional investors around ESG mandates, where they're actually, corporates are now like clamoring for solutions, not just because of some accord that's out there, but because their institutional investors are basically saying.
And Mike, you might just want to explain for the non-initiated ESG.
ESG, environmental, sustainability and governance.
Yeah, sorry.
So basically like impact oriented things. So low carbon, worker welfare, you know, a whole range of things there. And so that has actually, I think there is an association with funds like Sarah's as well as ours of deep tech means actually, you know, you're trying to you know, improve the world with solutions. And we actually position ourselves as backing companies that are solving some of the world's great challenges. And I think that resonated heavily with people.
Yeah. And Mike, can you give us an insight? Has anything changed? You've got another $250 million. Doesn't sit in the bank account. It's not quite how it works, but you have access to it. Are you going to bring on new partners, change your thesis, write bigger checks? What's the impact of this?
Yeah, Sarah very tactfully reminded me that ESG is actually, you mostly say ESG, so environmental, social, and governance.
Oh,
so
I did get it right.
Three things. But anyway, yeah, the plans are pretty much to do the same thing we have been doing. The fund's been going well. I obviously can't raise without having, you know, at least an emerging track record. So I think our founders have been doing awesome and our fund's, you know, going along well. So we want to kind of double down and do the same thing. I think what you'll see a little bit more from us is two things. One is we have an explicit focus on what we call decarbonization, which is basically just solutions across different sectors to remove carbon from the atmosphere. And Sarah probably could talk a lot about that as well, but that's an explicit focus. And I think that was of interest to a lot of people. And then the other thing is we have this approach on deals where if we see a big problem and we haven't necessarily seen the right founder, we'll actually start a company around it. So we're actually become founders ourselves, and we've started already in our second fund 4 companies that we haven't announced yet.
Oh, that's interesting.
That'll start coming out. So we call that venture science. You can kind of read about it online from us. But
who do you haul in to become the CEOs there?
So we run an entrepreneur in residence program. And then we work with the 4 components are, we obviously have to identify a big market opportunity. Once we do that, then we find the research capability, whether that's in a uni or a research institution like CSRO. We have an EIR, that's a domain expert that we work with to kind of pull a business plan and help us filter on the ideas. We work with an industry partner. Which is a little bit antithetical to a lot of venture, but actually for deep tech, I think is pretty important. So we work with, you'll hear announcements with some big corporates partnering with us in the same way that we work with Competitive Foods / Jack Cowan on V2 Foods to help, you know, bring that capability. And then ourselves. So four parties, research, entrepreneur, ourselves, and an industry partner.
And Mike, I mean, one of the areas that you invest in or focus on is around data and big data. And, you know, this might be an opportunity to bring in Andrew here because, I mean, ultimately, one of the use cases of Quantum is to be able to crunch large amounts of data. So, I mean, where are you seeing the crossover and the opportunities between what you're doing in the quantum world and what Main Sequence is doing in that data world?
Yeah, sure. So it's things like simulating, you know, complex systems that let us design the next generation of, you know, say materials like better batteries for different types of storage and energy distribution mechanisms. It's about, you know, better pharmaceuticals. So it's not necessarily a one-to-one mapping of then replacing everything in big data with a quantum computer. But there's then particular challenges, particularly in the design phase, that then a quantum computer can solve problems that are otherwise intractable. The other aspect where we feed in is actually particularly in edge computing for data processing locally. And so there's a lot of machine learning things like natural language processing in a satellite, for example, or in an autonomous vehicle, signal processing there, smart machine vision, that then existing, you know, GPUs and classical techniques really are hitting walls, and quantum computing can, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit for particularly our diamond-based quantum computers.
Yeah. All right, look, maybe we'll draw a line a little bit under this big news. So congrats, Mike, on that one. I just want to try and get into some more stories because I know Sarah's got to jump in a few minutes. There's another deal announced this week. Mike, I think you mentioned climate change and how important that is. I mean, that has a direct crossover into the ag tech world, which I think a lot of people don't appreciate, you know, carbon capture and this deal that we're going to talk about. So Sea Forest, which is a Tasmanian business, just raised $34 million. They basically designed seaweed. Well, they haven't designed it, but they've designed a way of farming it at volume. And ultimately, you can take some of the seaweed, put it into cattle feed, and stop the cows burping and farting, which is destroying the planet. So is that kind of the punchline, Sarah? Have I got that right?
Yes, minus the farting. That's a nice media line, but actually not a driver of emissions. The burping, yes, not so much the farting.
All right, so burping is much more unpleasant than farting. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know the pleasant index, and I'm not sure I want to, but on the methane, burping is the concern.
Interesting. But so, and I think it's called Asparagopsis. Is that the name of the? Yeah, so it's this special seaweed. Goes into the feed. I mean, is there anything more you can tell us about this one, Sarah? I mean, how close to the deal are you?
There's probably a couple ways to come at this, and Mike probably knows more than I on one angle. So one angle is CSIRO did a lot of the original research. Look at that, Mike's background. We need a screenshot of this for social media. No, Mike, you should be in it. The CSIRO has done work around the ability to capture or reduce the amount of methane emitted by cattle eating this seaweed, and the claims that you could then make to brands or downstream consumers, et cetera, around that benefit. And then there's a number of ways that that's being commercialized, Sea Forest being one of them. So that's kind of one interesting angle in terms of research commercialization and how we're making progress there in Australia that probably Mike can talk about more. From where we sit, sustainable protein is a massive theme. And we, as a fund, believe in both in multiple pathways towards sustainable protein. Improving livestock would be one. And then sort of plant-based and cellular agriculture, both areas we have an investment in, would be another. So this is very on theme for us. This deal, you know, in particular wasn't one that we're in, but I think really exciting that we're seeing progress towards sustainable protein in all its different forms.
Yeah. And Mike, I mean, this is a big deal. Anything north of 10 million is sort of a big deal in Australia, but it's great to see this. I mean, Sam is an amazing founder and he's done some great stuff. Yeah. What do you know about this one?
No, we've known Sam for a while, and he is awesome, and just the inspiring kind of founder that the sector needs. Because I think that's one takeaway is you do need evangelists in this world of deep tech, and I think he fits it, you know, to a T. And he's also, his background is interesting, as having worked in, I guess, in brands and clothing and things like that. So understanding the value of getting, ultimately, you know, why is this exciting for investors, is because somebody at the other end of the value chain wants to put a logo on, whether it's milk or a burger or something, to say, hey, this is a low carbon or a carbon neutral product. That's ultimately what this is about. And somebody hopefully along the way is willing to pay for that.
It's a super interesting area. Like, I'd be sorry to jump in and you again, Ian, like the intersection of what consumers will pay for and how sustainability is recognized with what we would see as real needs for deep tech to prove out those brands being true and enable that value to be captured. Because right now, take organic, take, you know, carbon neutral, any of these things, it's really a bit squishy. And so having that technology and that business model to be able to say, no, we can prove that this is true, or price it or quantify it, will take more than software in many cases. And so that whole area is, I think, theme for deep tech and ag tech in particular.
Yeah, no, he's an amazing guy. He actually came along and presented to our Horizon Angel Investor Group, and when we did that up in Sydney a couple of months ago. And it's so passion driven. I mean, he was one of these founders that just, you know, you cut him and he bleeds seaweed. Well, that's probably the wrong expression, but it's kind of like.
But
Aquaman,
you do realize, and Andrew also has these elements along with his co-founder Marcus, where you basically do have to, like, ironically, as a deep tech founder, you have to be a great salesperson and evangelist, because you got to get people along for the ride, whether it's customers or investors or even employees, to convince them to leave what they're doing and join. And, you know, a lot of times with deep tech, you're doing stuff pretty early, you know, and you know, you're trying to change the world and change the way something is done in a way that's different from building a new app or a marketplace or whatever, where the traction isn't that obvious.
Yeah. Maybe that's a great question to throw to Andrew there. I mean, that concept of passion driven versus being commercial driven. I mean, like when you were decided to do your PhD in quantum computing, did you think you were going to be running a startup? I mean, like, how did you go from one to the other?
So I did my PhD, and it was that general theme of science into tools, and I just kept wanting to take it further and take it out to people. And the other aspect too, Mike, that you hit on was that evangelism. And one of my favourite things through my science career was going out and telling people about all the cool stuff that we've done. And I was really lucky in my PhD. I was actually the first in our research group for a particular field that we were targeting. So I went and integrated ourselves into that new field, the different communities. And so I was then going out. There was a year where it was about a week every month I was on the road going and meeting with people or going to conferences, things like that. So I got a little practice at the evangelism there. But it's also easy when you've got something really cool and you want to tell people about it, then that, I mean, I think almost every scientist has that passion, right? You can't sustain yourself through long, multi-year challenging projects without a deep internal passion. And then, now you've got this platform to go tell people about it and loop people into your cause. It's the best.
And do you feel like a sort of chameleon that, you know, is the science world completely separate to the commercial world? Or, I mean, how do you think about the crossover?
No, I feel it's more like it's bringing worlds together. And particularly, I think in Australia, they're much more separate than they are in other parts of the world. Again, that was a fortunate thing doing my PhD in Europe and being exposed to different ecosystems there. The transitions between different sectors, you know, big industry, So, people do their PhDs. People in our company have done their PhDs in major European companies. That distinction is much more fluid, I guess.
Yeah.
So, the exciting thing about taking science and turning that into industry, though, and in Australia, then exposing a new part of quantum is now this area where there's a fantastic set of career opportunities for people coming out from Australian universities. And so that's one of the, I guess, just things I take a lot of personal satisfaction from, is that we're able to get, people coming out from PhDs and say, hey, look, all those skills you've learned are now actually commercially relevant.
And Mike, I think you had a perspective in this.
Oh, I was just going to say that we had the, I think it benefited all of us that Elon Musk, running Tesla and SpaceX, goes on to be one of the richest people in the world this year when all this is going on. And he's the ultimate. He's a deep tech founder, right?
Don't forget about Neuralink and the Boring Company and the solar. I mean,
Solar City and all that, right? Yeah, so he's an evangelical deep tech founder. And so that exists. I agree with Andrew that we don't sort of recognize the value quite as much down here. But overseas, I think, this year helped a lot. And Elon's helped a lot in showing people the value of science and hard engineering.
Yeah. All right. Look, I think we'll take a couple more topics and then move on. Sarah's had to jump, by the way. So if you're not hearing Sarah's voice, she had to go and run her own podcast, which I think was a fair enough excuse. So it's just the three of us for now. Next one I wanted to talk about was the Octopus deploy. One of the biggest, I think it was the second biggest ever investment round in an Australian business by a VC. So they raised $221 million from Insight Partners. The last biggest round, by the way, was Campaign Monitor, which received $250 million from Insight Partners. But that was a long time ago. That was 7 or 8 years, I think, Mike. This kind of came out of the blue. I mean, I'd heard of Octopus Deploy, but I had no idea they were this big. I mean, it's a massive business, husband and wife team, bootstrapped. What do you make of this one, Mike?
I think it's awesome. I mean, ultimately, what does it say? It says that for great deals, like the market it's a pretty liquid market and the best investors will find the best deals anywhere in the world. I mean, in the kind of growth area, we've had Excel, with a track record of doing deals, not just Atlassian, but a number of others down here. And I think it also speaks to that the market in the US is getting a bit competitive. So people are looking, abroad more seriously for opportunities to invest and abroad for opportunities to put their capital to work. So I think it's good. I think it's great. I mean, hopefully they're incredibly successful and, that staff and the founders will scale and then reinvest back into the ecosystem. And that's, we've seen that cycle work to the benefit of everyone.
And look, for now, I mean, I think there's no VC firm in Australia that could have cut a $200+ million check. But if you think back 10 years, there is no VC fund in Australia that could have cut a $10 million check. So it's kind of, we are incrementally getting better. So, 10 years from now, I think this will be not the norm, but it will be feasible. I think some Aussie funds had approached them over the years. And there was a great article in the AFR on this one, if you want to check it out, by Paul Smith, just talking about how US funds, and I think to Mike's point, how US funds are thinking about it and how, most of the Australian VCs are happy about this. I mean, I don't think there's any, I wish that was us. Ultimately it's good for the ecosystem, and that investment, part of the reason they went with Insight, which is based in New York, is that they've got access to the US market as well as this deep capital. So I don't know if this is a fair question, but any founder's perspective on this, Andrew? I mean, this is a big number.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's really exciting to see then Australian startups being able to secure that kind of resource. And it's a similar trajectory that we'll need to face. I guess I see it as then Australia, no matter what, we're too small an ecosystem to have then the really big startups confined to Australia. But we're fantastic. We've got so much innovation potential here, and it's a launching pad, I see, for global companies.
Yeah.
So I think it's a necessary step that then companies are going to the US and overseas capital markets as well as part of that growth. And that it's, I guess, a metric then of how vibrant the local ecosystem is that we're getting that, those scaled investments coming in.
All right, let's take one more story and then we might take an early exit on the podcast. It's not necessarily an Australian startup story. I'm sure there's some Aussies would have had their hand in this, but it's the first helicopter flight on Mars. So NASA, as we probably all saw, landed this one and a bit ton rover called Perseverance on Mars successfully probably 2 months ago, if I recall. Part of it, it's got a ton of different experiments on it. One of them is this helicopter, you know, so they basically dropped this drone, reversed the rover and watched it. And it's super complicated. I mean, Mars has got a third of Earth's gravity, but only 1% of the atmosphere. So it had to be really light. The blades had to spin super fast. They had to be much more self-adjusting than most earthbound things. And they were doing it on a different planet. I mean, it's, as far as human ingenuity and achievement goes, I mean, this is up there with the Wright brothers. In fact, I think they called the plane that the helicopter flew on the Wright plane or something like that. Mike, are you a space geek? Like, how excited were you when you saw this?
Some of my partners are bigger space geeks than me, but I've invested in a couple drone companies, including Emisent, which is doing autonomous flight. So I get it, and I think it is amazing. And I think people have to understand that the work we're doing in space does have an impact on our capabilities back on Earth, and vice versa. I mean, I know a lot of mining tech, for example, or underwater tech is developed. It's kind of almost along the development path. And, you know, you have a lot like remote operations, for example, underground or underwater. You have to have a lot of, you know, the right autonomy, variable conditions, not easy access to, you know, swap out kit and things like that. So I think I look at it as a way we're moving humanity forward, not just in space, but on the Earth as well.
Yeah, no, super, super exciting. And yeah, congrats to NASA and all involved. Andrew, I mean, there is some relevance to space and quantum computers, I believe. So, I mean, do you want to give us an insight to that and unleash your inner space geek about the ingenuity?
Yeah, so I'll try and keep that one in check. But I certainly, definitely have my space phases growing up. And this is an incredibly cool thing to see. The thing that's, I guess, exciting for us too in this is this growth in extreme edge devices. And, you know, we see it from near Earth orbit satellites through to, you know, that we're sending helicopters to Mars and looking at near-term deployment of satellite constellations around the moon. These are areas where you don't really have access to cloud computing. You need to carry it all with you. And there's a lot of gnarly problems in terms of signal processing and making intelligent decisions that classical computing really struggles with. Quantum computing can get you there, but not if it's the size of a room. And so this is where I think Dawn quantum computing is really quite unique in its ability to support and address a whole range of space-based technologies. And we're actually starting to have conversations with national space agencies and major aeronautics companies about exactly that.
Yeah, that's great. And Mike, like, is Australia going to be, I think Sally Ann Williams was talking about this in the, I think it was the AFR today, about Australia being a bit behind where it should be in the space race. I don't know if that's the right expression, but yeah, what's your view on where Australia is at in the space industry and what we can do better?
I'm not sure I have a lot of criticism there. We've actually done a lot in the last few years. We've got a number of space investments, as do other people. I think there are over 100 space startups. We've got a space agency. We've got, you know, a decent initial budget. And
you've got a focus from South Australia. I mean, the government there is trying to attract a lot of activity.
Yeah, and I actually think there are just a shock. This is one of the big eye openers for me because I'm not from CSRO, but then joining CSRO and having the opportunity to look around and see what assets are there, you realize how much capability and infrastructure is there around space in Australia already. And just one example is the Square Kilometer Array, one of the most powerful radio telescopes in the world. And that was developed and kind of running by, CSRO and their partners down in, out in WA. So I will not, you won't hear us complaining about it. And actually I think hear us announcing another space investment soon.
That's awesome.
So we're bullish.
That is awesome. All right, look, I think we might call it there. I mean, this was a quick deep dive into the deep tech sector. So I appreciate you both coming on, and Sarah, who joined us as well. Andrew, before we go, like anything you want to comment, like where should people find out more, and when will we first start seeing quantum computers as sort of graphic card style attachments to our main computers?
We've got a 5-year pathway to having that lunchbox size device that gives you supercomputer level performance for certain tasks. And so that's not been where we've crossed that threshold now. We can give people hardware now, and we're going to deploy over in Perth at the Pawsey Supercomputing Center there in a couple of months, a first basic device, which is around giving people tools for systems integration development, developing technologies up and down the quantum software stack, and technologies that leverage quantum computing and its integration into other classical systems. But then at that 5-year point, we've got that lunchbox size device that's now actually solving people's problems faster.
Yeah.
And so in the meantime, people can reach out to us at contact@quantum-brilliance.com or my email is andrew.horsley@quantum-brilliance.com.
Awesome. And Mike, anything you want to say? Like, if you've got some deep tech founders out there wanting to get it, an intro, what should they do?
Come talk to us. We're fairly good about, trying to respond to inbounds. You can email me at mike@mseq.vc or get us on, social media. Have a look at what we're doing on our website. I think that's, a good use of time for people and, before they just drop the blind email in. It's a good use of founders' time, but, we're obviously open for business and have a decent amount of capital to spend. So,
well, good on you.
Come on in.
Look, you are a great asset to the ecosystem, and thanks for being one of the most tenured VCs. Like as I said at the top of the show, like we are hanging out next week with I think 70 other VCs in Adelaide. So we'll maybe be talking about space and a few other things, but that is next week. So Andrew, Mike, and Sarah, who's off doing her own podcast. Thanks so much, and thank you everyone for listening. See you next time.
Thank you, Ian. Thanks for everything you're doing. Appreciate it.